They joined up, didn't they, about 1940 or so?
Yeah, was that right? I can't remember when, but I'll boom on about Alice for a moment, and then I want to withdraw because I keep talking. But I remember her, because she was, with all this curious Horton Franklin business, she had various feminine kind of things she liked to do. She was very good, or so we thought, in needlework, for instance. She did all the chair covers in her flat, and she cared about her flat and all that, and she didn't like, she lived in a, I suppose what would now seem a moderately aristocratic way. Her things were all very nice, and were nicely done.
Some antique things.
Yes, she inherited, and she made nice things, and it was elegantly done. That was, she didn't plummet, she didn't use plastic, you know. And so that was that. She always, in my childhood, used to wear very severe brown costumes. I remember her in a sort of brown cloth, all brown. As against that, she was great fun, you see. Sometimes I think when people write about people like Alice, they forget what fun they were. And to a child, she was great fun. I mean, if somebody was ill, they would perhaps arrive a great big hat box labelled medicine, and then you would undo it. There'd be masses of nice things and amusing presents in it. I mean, she was capable of that. She was very good at children's parties.
Was she really?
And I remember taking my children down there, and she quickly sent round to some Belgian patisserie for marvellous cakes and buns and everything. She would be a favourite aunt in that way when I was a child.
And she understood how children work.
Yes, she was very good. Yes, I would say so. Yes, yes, she was nice about that.
Whereas Mamie, who was chairman of London Education and all that, was the expert on children, never really had this.
No patience with them.
But this flat that she had.
Do you remember the address, Colin?
Oh, it was in Cheswold. What was Onslow? No, not Onslow. Elm Park Gardens.
Elm Park.
And that's sort of inner South London, isn't it?
That's, it's kind of South Kensington, Chelsea.
Yes, yes, yes. I know. And was that a sort of, was it a grand flat?
No, sure. I think it was, it would seem now to be a very decently big flat for two people to share, I suppose. There was a very, as far as I remember, a nice dining room and drawing room it was ample without
maid,
being.
Did they have a maid, Colin, to look after them? I was trying to remember.
I don't remember a maid.
Serving the meal? I don't think they served it themselves.
I simply can't remember whether Alice ever cooked.
Mm. Oh, I think
probably not.
No, I think they had someone to.
But I can't remember if they did, Charlotte. I can't remember if they had a.
Somebody came in, I think.
Somebody came in, probably, yes.
That's right. Then.
I mean, I'm guessing, but
no, I definitely remember.
Can't remember any housekeeper that Alice had, no.
Mm. But she was left. Right up to the end of her life, was she? I mean, she was on the left, politically.
I suppose so. I mean, she wasn't particularly political, I think. I don't remember that she ever worked politically. My mother first met my father through Alice because she was... she followed with all her rebellion. I mean, she followed all this good works kind of background, which this Jewish middle class nurtured. And she was doing girl guides or something, or she was doing Jewish children's clubs holidays or something like that, you know, and roped in help. And 1913, 1914, that sort of time, when my parents met. I think her life was always a mixture of carrying on a tradition and also being, you know, in... personal things rather rebellious, but I don't think that her life expressed rebellion. I think it went on
in a way rather as a,
yes, I think she chucked the Jewish side of things, you see, to which she'd been brought up. That was altogether jettisoned.
For nothing at all, or
oh yes, I think for good sort of 1920s atheism, yes.
What did she look like actually? I mean, of course, you only presumably remember her from late middle age onwards, basically, do you?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I remember her only really when I think she considered herself as retired from her main work and was just helping out.
From 1950.
And looking, as I said, really sort of aggressively unattractive.
I think she always had what was called cropped hair. And with a very unattractive sort of smoker. I don't know how you have an attractive smoker, but she was, long ash, drooping and dripping, and that sort of rather feminist smoker in those days.
We ought to be able to find a picture of her somewhere, wouldn't
we? Yes. But I dare say she looked very nice when she felt nice, because she was nice, in character. She was witty. She was witty.
Was she?
Yes.
In what sort of way? Intellectually sharp?
I think she had a good sense of the ridiculous.
I see.
Well, like Rosalind's humour, I think.
Yes.
And,
This is marvellous, because, I couldn't get any of this sort of thing from Mrs. Horton at all. She didn't talk about her personality.
Mm. Well, I think the two other people that could help you, one is Ursula, I think, was rather close to her, wasn't she?
Yes.
Is that Ursula Richley?
Yes.
Mrs. Horton mentioned her.
Yes. You see, Alice herself, when in her latest days, it was Ursula and Charlotte, for instance, whom she admired, and certainly not me. So you ought to get Charlotte to talk more than me, because I remember, for instance, that when she was dying, we heard that she wanted to see me, as I thought, or us, I didn't know what it was. Anyway, I turned up to visit her, and it was made perfectly clear to me that I wasn't wanted a bit. It was Charlotte she was seeing, I was kind of bundled out. Mm-hmm. And I think she decided rather interestingly when she was on what she knew to be her deathbed that she wanted to see the people she liked and she didn't want to see the others.
Mm.
And
the women, they were all
so
women.
So she chose to see. And so that Horton, as I think of her, would naturally say, yes, you should talk to Charlotte, talk to Ursula, and that's quite right, really.
Yeah.
Horton, I really know nothing about because she was always a rather timid background. And there was also somebody else who we knew as Horton's husband. There was always, Alice would talk about Horton, and there was a thousand person in the background known as Horton's husband who occasionally got in the way and would turn up, you see. Horton had to go away because Horton's husband was in the background.
What was the setup actually between ourselves? They were in a sense divorced, were they, but not actually sort of...
Who, the Hortons?
The Hortons. I mean, they
I think so. I think they just lived apart. I don't, not aware that there was a divorce. I don't suppose there was.
Right, they lived completely separate lives, as far as I can see.
Yes. Yes. There was somebody else in the background who, you knew her or not, Margaret Purvis.
Purvis, yes.
And she was a close friend of Alice's. She was older, she must have died years ago. And another was old Miss Strachey.
Oh, yes, Pippa Strachey, you mean. You?
I suppose I do. She must be dead.
The rather bird-like.
Yes, I met her at the Four Senses.
Yes, she was the key figure in the London Society.
That's
Four
right.
Society.
Yes.
She's a very interesting woman.
She's dead, isn't she?
Oh, yes, she died about 10 years ago.
And she was a sister of Lytton Strachey, was she? Or cousin,
that's right.
Or what,
yes,
sister?
Right.
Yes.
Yes. So she had friends then, did she, Alice? I mean,
there was this little circle of friends, as far as I know. There were probably others, but Margaret Purvis was very close. She was always staying with her in my childhood, and they would come down to Chartridge, my grandfather's house, together. Alice and Margaret Purvis would come to stay. She was certainly important. I don't know what she did, whether Margaret Purvis was in these women's movements or what.
Across the name.
No. And then she lived. Who lived at Clifton Hampden? Was that some?
I don't remember.
Yes, we visited her, don't you remember? Yes. Miss... Everybody's Miss, of course. Miss... Oh, no. Don't remember.
Come back, perhaps.
At Clifton Hampden, I don't. I remember going over to Cheltenham, to that country hotel, and then she took us to Worcester, to the...
Took us to the Saint Lumière, Gloucester, yes.
Gloucester,
But, you think she probably was a Labour voter, do you?
I'd bet it, yes.
Mm.
Oh, yes, surely.
Mm. Mm. But I doubt if she went canvassing and bothered in that sort of way.
No.
And she never stood, you see, like her sister did.
Mm.
No, but I mean, that was her sort of philosophy in politics.
Yeah, but she never took part and sat on councils and all this sort of thing. Mm. I don't think the Fawcett Society, the Fawcett Society came rather late in the day for her. It was a semi-retirement job. I think that the what happened before Townswomen's Guild? What was the really exciting thing? I suppose the Canada thing, yes.
Yes, but she, yes, whatever that was. Society for Overseas Women's Settlement or whatever.
Yes.
Yes.
That was about 10 years of that before she went into the.
I thought that's what she got the OBE for.
Could well be, actually.
And that was irritating to your father, wasn't it, that she got the OBE long before?
No, not at all. Absolutely not. No, I think he was very proud of it. No, no, that's nonsense.
Is it?
But was she aggressively feminist in the sense that, was she always pushing the women in the family to have careers and so on? Was she tiresome in that way, or was it all quite moderate and sort of reasonable?
She wasn't aggressive in that way at all, I should say. I mean, I think just in her mind that's what she wanted, but not in any way pushing, or never said to me, look, you ought to really be working as well as being a wife, never anything like that.
She just privately pleased, or you felt she was pleased.
If one
She enjoyed aspects of rebellion. I think that if I felt bitter with my father, Alice was the person I would go and discuss it with. I mean, that was the kind of character she had, you see. That was fun for her and for us.
And but you were irritated by your mother for being so domestic.
Yes.
How did she spend her time? Was it really all good works, really, not much else? Or did she play bridge or have hobbies or...?
Needlework she did, that we know.
I don't think of her as a bridge player.
No. I don't think of her as a traveller or a walker, that sort of thing particularly.
She had a holiday in Finland one year, I seem to remember. And then it was quite a thing when she had to give up her car. I think that was a great loss of independence.
She drove herself.
Oh, yes.
She was an early-ish driver, I think. She certainly drove in the, back in the 1920s and before.
Yes. Somebody told me, I don't know who it was, it certainly wasn't Mrs. Horton, that she had a curious sort of inferiority complex about being Jewish. She was clearly embarrassed by this fact. This is when she was in the Townswomen's Guild.
Well, that could well be, I think.
And you'd think this is rather odd, really, because you'd think that being so well established in a well-to-do Jewish family, she wouldn't be in the least embarrassed.
I think she might have been embarrassed just by that aspect of it, by the well-to-do-ness, but I don't know that she was embarrassed by the Jewishness, because she wasn't anything else. I mean, she just cut religion out. I think she probably didn't want to be associated with the rich Jewish business circles, but she might have enjoyed the Jewish artistic circles. I wouldn't have thought that Jewishness embarrassed her just like that.
I was rather surprised about this house. I suppose she must have been a little unusual in the Townswomen's Guild in being Jewish. That time, maybe she just felt rather out of her milieu or something, I don't know. Did she read? Was she a reader? Was she a cultivated person, even though she wasn't educated, would you say? Or wasn't educated at university level? You know?
I don't think any of my family has been very cultivated. I doubt if she read widely.
Maybe
I doubt if she had languages. Maybe read more.
And music didn't mean much to her.
Though she liked surrounding herself with nicer objects, did she?
Yes, I would say so. She had a collection, I think it was her own collection, of samplers. Or was it inherited from my grandmother? Anyway, I mean, that doesn't seem specially feminist, but she liked that and left a lot of them. Her flat was decorated with them. No, children's needlework.
Yes, I think Mrs. Horton's got some from her. Did she have a lot of furniture around her then? And was it sort of full of antiques, this flat? Or was
I mean, I doubt she would ever have spent any money on herself or bought anything precious. I don't think that she didn't go snooping around antique shops in the way people do now. I think she probably just took what she wanted from my grandparents' house when they died.
Yeah.
I think it was as simple as that. And and what she wanted was rather nice.
Yeah.
But I don't think she was a person who coveted objects. or felt as people do now, you know, about what this or that is worth. I didn't think that would have entered her head, you know. Yeah. I think that sort of generation was above it in the way that we're beneath it, you know.
Yeah.
And I admire them for that.
Yes. Did she have, do you remember her being energetic, bustling around, organising things?
I remember her really as considering herself retired and having quiet country holidays and leading really rather a quiet life.
Yes.
But she had us to dinner once or twice and she came to us.
And got on with your children?
Yes. And, you know, just that I liked her, but I can't really give very much more than that, I don't think.
Yes.
But I always felt a bit sad for her, that she did seem bitter, and that I did feel that she hadn't had her full chance. I didn't know why she hadn't married, I mean...
Bitter, not, was she bitter at the Townsman's Guild, or just bitter at not having been educated fully?
Well... somehow, a bit of a chip, I would say, against the world.
Did you know?
But I think that may be a women's sort of chip.
Yes, I understand, yes. Because did she ever talk much about the Townsman's Guild? I mean, was it
that aspect of it I didn't know anything about. I mean, I just knew she'd done that. But I felt that it was a women's institute that had come up, and the Townswomen's Guild nobody was so interested in.
But it was coming up all the time she was connected with it, at least until the war began. It absolutely went from strength to strength. And then the war obviously made it difficult to organise things like that. And then there were rows and things inside the organisation. And then she and also Hawthorne were pushed out. You know, she's undoubtedly, the reason why I'm so interested in her is because she was a real dynamo in the early years. And Mrs. Hawthorne certainly feels, I think, that it was a tragedy, you know, the way everything worked out. It was so.
I don't think Alice ever harked back on the idea of tragedy. I think she would have said slightly ruefully, they kicked us out or something, and gone on to live a different life. I don't think it stayed with her that, because I doubt whether she was ambitious for herself particularly.
No. Mm.
But Ursula might really know a bit more about that.
When you say she had these brown dresses, do you mean, were they fashionable dresses? I mean,
no, I think they were rather... I mean, Alice was very... When my sister put it, when did Alice turn peculiar? I mean, she was rather aggressively unattractive, by which I don't mean aggressively ugly at all. She had an interesting, rather masculine face. She had this short hair and these... severe, brown, sort of two-piece, would one say, two-piece costume of some sort. I mean, it was far from being, I can't imagine Alice was ever very sexy, but maybe as a young girl she was. But certainly when I remember her, she's sort of anti-sex, you know. I wouldn't say she was masculine, perhaps that's wrong to say masculine, she was kind of unsex.
Yeah.
And
so she didn't dress to attract at all.
No, that's right. I mean, she dressed absolutely four square, you know.
Sensible shoes.
Yes.
She was an.
But I remember, she enjoyed country things. We had quite gay times. For instance, mushrooming at Chartres. Mushrooming was a great thing. She'd join in all that.
She'd join in with the children. She had always.
Oh yes, I think she enjoyed country life.
And your nanny liked her best of all the other generation.
Yes, that's an interesting point. Yes.
As regards servants, I mean, they had quite a lot of servants in her youth.
What about class then? I mean, she got on with people, did she? Of any sort of social background, she wasn't.
I think so. She certainly wasn't snobbish or anything, and.
Well, I think she was more sensitive to the servants' room had no heating and all this kind of thing, that they had the leftovers to eat.
Well, she was more
That other people just took for granted. I mean, that's how it was.
Was she enthusiastic for education, or adult education, or education generally? And did she ever...
I don't remember. In that way, that's always the younger sister, Mamie, who was sort of very... definitely trying to convince everyone of her point of view. But Alice, I think, I don't feel that she ever tried to convince anybody of her.
Because the Townsmen's Guilds was largely an adult education affair, really, in its first 10 years, and got money from the government for that reason. They got quite extensive grants from the Carnegie Trust and organisations like that as well, on the grounds that it was training women to educate themselves and to fulfil.
Well, I'm sure she would be keen on all, you know, I feel that was her sort of ideas, but she didn't push it down your throat, certainly not at us.
You know, that's very interesting, because it gives me quite a different, you see, I haven't talked to any family people at all.
So I think that in a certain sense, that kind of person, as I remember her and her sister, and I'm sure the other people we're talking about, had a sort of high morality, which, and this isn't only old man's talk now, which I think probably is pretty much lost. And well, I don't know why it's pretty much lost, but the high morality, I think they probably were, and you could spread the word right through, I think that they were probably very straight in sexual morality. They didn't go in for sex. They probably thought it rather wicked and so married. I really don't think she probably, I think, I would say she probably didn't have a lesbian relationship with Horton, but you best ask Horton that.
I think that they
cut that sort of thing out, as they would have cut out any form of racket from their lives. You see, our lives, not him particularly, my life, but I mean the life of now is so rackety with things like tax avoidance coming to everybody's life, say, that kind of thing, you see. Absolutely not on for them, not at all. And I think it was this familiar social compensation thing that they were born with silver spoons, and they felt that they must join committees and live for other people and do social work. It was she was a victim or the queen of that sort of thing.
That's very interesting. I mean, again, I've come across this with others. It's not, when you say they've got a high morality, it's not particularly that you're thinking of personal morality, but more the feeling that by personal effort and integrity you could actually change things and improve things. Isn't that
yes, and that it was their job in the world to do that.
They were
placed in society to do that, and as they'd had an easy upbringing, it was their job to help them, that kind of compensation thing that they lived by. And
it is something that has declined. It's difficult to know why.
She wouldn't have gone in for expensive anything, as you see. We've said she had nice furniture, but I mean, she would never have bought it.
No, it's combined with personal.
She wouldn't have gone in for. Say, I mean, my childhood, we never, till I was 18 or so, I never had a meal in a restaurant. It wasn't on, it wasn't in, that sort of thing. In my little group, I don't mean generalize about the world, my little corner of bourgeois society didn't go in for things like that. It was anti-luxury.
Yes,
I suppose my father could have afforded it, perhaps, but it would have been repellent to him, you see.
Yes.
And I think Alice was of that order of life. She probably assumed that you had a cook, that you didn't cook your own stuff, and that you got nice things. Well, that itself, you could say now, is rather cynical if you had those assumptions. But it was, they were very simple assumptions, really.
And very cold, I think, I mean, heating and so on.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, that's partly just that everybody was less affluent and standards were lower in terms of material.
But she would never have told people off. She would never have been arrogant, you know. She was a kind person.
And she was close to Rosalind, wasn't she?
Very close to Rosalind, my sister, yes.
That's very interesting. Could you tell me a bit about Hugh?
You knew Hugh even less, I suppose, because he died.
The reason why I mentioned Hugh is because he had this sort of rather dramatic past and all this.
Well, Hugh was Hugh was fun. He was fun. He was always inventing things. He was a great failure in life, as the world sees it, because none of his inventions ever came off, you see. He was a sort of Woodhouse character, almost. And we always knew darkly of Hugh that he invented things and that hadn't worked. I forget what he invented. I think he'd invented some form of infallible way whereby a lifeboat at sea, if the ship was going to sink, he was distressed to think that only half the lifeboats would work and the other half would swing inboard or something, so he'd invented something wonderful to stop there. Well, that was one of Hugh's inventions. He'd also, I think my grandfather had set him up in business twice and he'd tried to corner the world's rubber or something or done something clever and that hadn't come off. So, or he'd bought excessively in something that went wrong. Anyway, Hugh had flopped. I mean, so he was supported by the family. And he'd also done the wicked thing of marrying out, as the phrase goes. You know, he'd married someone who'd got converted to being Jewish. That was okay. She died. And
she was a Duval, wasn't she?
Was she? She was...
suffragette, yeah.
Yes. And then he married an excessively dull woman called Bunny, rather appropriately, who was, I believe, his secretary and presumably once glamorous, who I remember just as Bunny, just like that, awful. Awfully boring woman. And Hugh had a really rather boring old age. He would mow his lawn in the Hampstead Garden suburb and...
he was chairman of the Metropolitan
Board. All that sort of thing. He was chairman of the Metropolitan Board. He was sort of yanked into public service by co-option always. I don't think anybody ever elected him to anything. But he had his sister who was in the Greater OLCC as it then was, and he always got co-opted onto committees in a rather obscure way. So there was that. He was left wing, of course, but he was very tall, thin, alert, splendid figure of a man,
chair.
Really, until that was, yes, he had long legs. That was his chair that made for him. You can see, an extraordinarily uncomfortable for anybody else. And so he was amusing and good company. He always had an excessively old motor car, which he was always tinkering with and putting right. I suppose it always went wrong, therefore. And when we had family holidays as children and Hugh came down, that was always a signal for good fun, you know. He was an excellent uncle, never had children. Now, what can I tell you of a more interesting kind?
That's
all sort of boring stuff. I mean, you know, the character, this isn't worth even putting onto tape, but I remember he joined us up in Yorkshire once when I was 9 years old for a holiday. And we drove, there were two cars, you see, and I was in Hugh's car. We drove to a place called Selby in Yorkshire, I remember. And I was in Hugh's car, and my father was in the car behind, and we were looking for something in Selby, perhaps the Abbey or something. I remember Hugh saying, let's pretend we know our way around Selby, and went extraordinary lefts and rights through the back streets of Selby, and I remember looking back happily to see my father being totally mystified from there. This was typical sort of Hugh conduct, you see. He was always amusing to us as children. But he was, I think he was in sympathy. He used to talk more about socialism and the webs, webs socialism. And, of course, there was always this vaguely romantic history, which I don't think we ever dared ask him about whipping Winston Churchill. It always seemed rather a dashing thing to have done, to have whipped Winston Churchill, and that he'd been to prison. And that once, I think it was again in a sort of distant, hazy family joke, that not much more, that he'd once wanted, out of curiosity, when he was going for a holiday in the West Country, to look over Princeton, the prison, and Dartmoor, and he'd applied for permission to do this. And his application had been turned down on the grounds that he was an old lag, you see.
But was he a rebel rather like Alice in that sense? I mean,
yes.
Rather against the government and against the system? I mean.
He was, yes, very much, I think. Wouldn't you?
Yes, but he was much more cheerful than Alice.
Did they get on well? I don't remember them together.
I think they did, but they looked critically what? Apart.
Oh. Mm. Well, Hugh had such an amazing... It was curious that he lived such a dull, conventional, dim, suburban life. It really was the essence of suburbia, his life. Can't think why. I mean,
he was cut off without a penny, wasn't he? Second time marrying out.
Yes, he was cut off without a penny. He was cut off without a father, chiefly. I mean, his father wouldn't see him. And the family supported him.
But he would have been cut out of a will. I mean, it was always in the will.
Yes, I think Mrs. Horton told me something like that. Did not the other brothers agree to give him the money that his
father... Oh, I expect so. I mean, that would have been in keeping, yes.
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 He ceased to be a Jew, did he? Practicing Jew?
No, sure.
Well, yeah, oh, yes. I mean, I doubt if he was ever a practicing Jew. I don't think he started to cease. I think he probably... yes.
And he lived in Hampstead Gardens. How did he all his adult life, married?
Well, I remember vaguely his moving there, but I can't remember where he moved from.
Mm. But he stayed there for a long
time.
Yes. Because that's very much a sort of Jewish intellectuals.
Well, his wasn't. I think
he
was in a boring suburban bit. I mean,
almost working class. Though.
Yes, when he moved there.
Small, tiny
house.
So, what did he do then? Mow the lawn.
And sit on committees to which he was co-opted. Yes. There were, what were these committees? I can't remember. There was Metropolitan Water Board. That was always something we used
Cecil
to hear about.
Was
there
was
a phrase.
Was
Cecil was on hospitals. Hugh was, he may have been on hospitals. Metropolitan Water Board, I think, could it have been education? Was he on education
I think he
committee?
Might have been on education.
Of the LCC?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or of management of one school, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But Ursula might be able to remember that.
Why, incidentally, just reverting to Anna for a moment, you said she didn't dislike the Jewish family circle and things. Why did she dislike that?
Oh, well,
I think that's
the easy one, that insofar as
element of hypocrisy and piousness about it.
Well, and insofar as it stood for things that weren't necessarily Jewish, I mean, for the rather pompous Edwardian family background with servants and propriety, you see, I think this wasn't her line at all. And she was a sort of Fabian or Ibsenish rebel, you know.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah. I don't think what she rebelled against was necessarily Jewish, but she identified it with that, perhaps.
Yeah, but if we could just move to the family a little. I mean, it's a very interesting family.
The earliest I can tell you about Hugh is a rhyme in my grandparents' silver wedding thing, which said, "Little Hughie hated dirt, always sat on mother's skirt." But I don't think it was particularly significant for his future.
But it seems that all that generation sort of shedding their Jewishness. Is that right?
Not all. There were
the
six.
The ones without children, really.
I see.
Yes. Though you wouldn't say that Mamie shed her Jewishness completely because she was married to Helen Bentwich.
She herself would have shed it.
Yes, she was married to quite a notable Jew, Norman Bentwich, who was professor at the Hebrew University.
Mm.
But Mamie, Colin, as far as she was concerned, shed it.
Well, but she was very much concerned with Jewish things because she would spend a lot of her life in Palestine as it then was and so on.
Mm.
And she was very much, came to the defense of Jews if there was any anti-Semitic talk around.
Mm. Mm.
Though she very much shared synagogue life and all that sort of thing, yes.
Mm. So I ask you this because there are several Jewish families, yours isn't the only one, that are very much connected with the women's suffrage movement. It's Eva Hubbock's another one.
Now Eva Hubbock was a close friend. And she was related, wasn't she?
Yes, Eva Spielman.
She was a Spielman by birth,
right.
And it's all related in this
her
cousinhood
sister
thing.
Her sister is still alive, I think.
Yes, she
Eva's
is.
Eva's sister?
I've met her.
Yeah.
Who? Winifred.
Yes. But
and Eva was certainly a friend of Mamie's, probably of Alice's, I think, too.
Yeah. Do you remember Eva?
Yes.
What she looked like.
Yes.
Because I'm very interested in Eva. She's a very important person.
Well, you would have pictures of her at Morley College, wouldn't you?
Yes. I've seen, well, there's a book biography of her, of course. Yeah.
There's a good book about her by
her daughter.
Diana, isn't it? Yes.
Yes. I've talked to her, all her children actually, about her.
Mm.
But she's a very interesting person. I think she's the person who got Alice involved with the Townsend's Guild, actually.
Oh.
Think so.
Well, Colin's family and the Hubbock family shared a nanny, so that was very close.
My nanny came straight from Eva to me, so.
Did
no,
she?
To my brother, yes.
Yes.
And she had a cottage in Cornwall, you know about all those
That's
things.
That's right. Because Eva was an absolute central figure in the whole of the women's movement. She's like a sort of a hub in a way, with lots of things opening out from her.
Yes.
Birth control, Townsend's Guild, naturally, the Women's Suffrage Society, and all sorts of things.
But she was very different from Alice, I mean, that she was always lecturing and talking and converting.
Yes, I mean, no chip on her shoulder, as far as one could tell, and very extroverted in some ways. But what interests me is why these families, maybe there is no general reason, but why the Spielman family or the
Franklin
family or whatever, there are others as well connected with the Swavelings and that group. And the Golags, why all these families get hooked up with one another?
Well, I think the Jewish religion, the Orthodox Jewish religion, doesn't give women much due, and I think that is very irritating. I mean, I still find it so to this day. Yesterday we were at Colin's mother's memorial service for a year after her death, and the rabbi made a very, very phony thing about Miriam, didn't he? Saying that although people say that women are not, in fact they are, he said this of Miriam in the Bible, and it's just the need that he has to say it, that the rabbis always say it, just they may say it, but it's not true. Because in fact
I think that's perhaps going back too far.
I think the
Jewish families are
Boy with his bar mitzvah. I mean, I think even as a child, you know, everything is for the boy.
But the Jewish families, whether it comes out in one form or another, tend to be intellectual. And if there are intellectual women, then in that particular generation it expressed itself perhaps in feminism. I would be more profound about it than that. I don't think it was Alice's reaction against the Jewish attitude to women. I wouldn't say so. You may disagree with that.
Certainly the women's suffrage movement in all its branches is a movement for...
And that was the thing, yes, yes, yes.
But Eva, you see, had a terrific business with the Spielmans. She was the rebel of the family, and she had awful problems with her parents and so on to break...
Marrying out.
Yes, marrying out as well. Though always combined with a lot of affection for family life and for family gatherings and so on.
But Colin's nanny said that the marriage was breaking up. I mean, if he hadn't died, she didn't know what would have happened.
I believe that's so. I believe he drank or something. That is...
So it was rather sad, that aspect of it, after her.
Yes, I believe that is so. Although you wouldn't guess that from the biography.
No, of course.
But she seemed to have managed on her own these three children.
But again, Nanny didn't like working for her. I mean,
Is that so?
That she was always checking, sort of ringing up from the office to see whether Nanny had gone out, even though it was raining with the children, and sort of didn't really trust her.
Is that so? Is the nanny still alive?
No,
I'm afraid not.
What a pity, because
she would have been interesting indeed for you, yes.
Yes.
No, I mean, she liked Alice, but didn't. I think this sort of very bossiness of Eva Hubbock, and a bit like the Dickens character, you know, very busy for the whole world, but not for her own children.
Yes, well, all her children had problems, didn't they, one way or another? They were due to her, I don't know, but...
Well, I mean, they were without a father, which isn't easy.
Yes.
And they were a bit between two worlds.
Yes. But she's very fruitful. She starts things off, you know, and then they take off afterwards. And, you know, she's in on everything, really. But there's no doubt she did irritate some people.
No, I'm sure she did. I mean, at Morley, too, I think she irritated people.
Yes.
She was on the Population Commission.
Yes, well, no, she wasn't, but she...
Oh, she thought she ought to have been, that's right. She was furious that she wasn't.
She was the key woman behind Peggy Jay.
That's right, yes, that's right.
She had this sort of circle of people in Hampstead, actually, who lodged with her or whatever. There was John Freeman and Lord Balog. I went to see Lord Balog the other day in the House of Lords to talk about her. And he had a very vivid memory of her, you know, where she'd taken interest in a young Hungarian boy who was stuck in London and didn't know anybody or how to behave or anything. She sort of gave him lodgings.
She'd be very good at all that sort of thing.
But maybe one should just look at it in terms of peculiarly deprived, peculiarly educated young women, really, to try and explain why this range of Jewish young women.
Well, was it also rather like one hears that when working class girls started to be able to get something other than domestic servant work, it was at the telephone exchange, because that's just what was available. And when fairly bright young women who weren't involved in looking after their children and households could burst out of it, it was women's movement. That's what was available.
Yes, yes. Can you just tell me a little about the Franklin family? I don't know anything about it. It's a banking family, basically, isn't it? That's where the money came from originally, is it?
Franklins were... yes, that's right. I think my great-grandfather, called Ellis Abram Franklin, founded the family fortunes, insofar as there are fortunes or were. He was born, I think, in Liverpool. His father was, dare it be said onto tape, a pawnbroker in Liverpool. And I think that he was co-founder of a bank called Keyser, which was a sale of respectability until about 4 years ago. So he and there were two family banks. There was Keyser, which he was a director. Ellis Franklin, I think, was started at Samuel Montague. That was the other one, and then founded Keyser, and along with Morris Keyser. We weren't told why it was called Keyser and not Franklin. It's dark notions suggest themselves to me that the Keyser part was rather more important, but that never so much as framed itself as a question until this moment. And that was back in, say, 1860-ish.
Mm-hmm. And we had the centenary dinner.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm relating to, but perhaps 1864 or something like that.
Yeah, it would be.
And then my grandfather was a director of Keyser's, and...
It had come to London by the time
it was... Oh, it was founded in London. It was never in Liverpool. And, yes, all this banking activity was in London.
Yes.
And then I think that my great-grandfather had... Ellis Abram Franklin. He built himself a... he built himself, didn't he? Or a house in Portchester Terrace, or was that my grandfather? I think he... can't remember. I think that he built himself a house in Portchester Terrace in London, or he lived in Pembridge Gardens. I really can't, I'm not sure. Anyway, my grandfather, in the heyday of sort of pre-1914, when everything was specially blooming, he had a rather grand establishment in a road called Portchester Terrace, which survived until the bombs of the last war.
I know quite well.
I distantly remember it. It's not, I don't think any of the big houses survive now. And, I mean, they look quite big, but they're nothing like those houses were. And he and his brothers were bankers. Ernest Franklin was senior partner of Samuel Montague. And the Swathelings, he married a Swatheling, you see. That was all this cousinhood thing, as the word coined. And then my grandfather's sister, I think, was Beatrice. She married the man who became Lord Samuel.
Yes.
And so they got interested through him. My family were very unconnected, really, with the most interesting Jewish movement of the time, which was Zionism, except Norman Bentwich. And I think my grandfather went out to Palestine, my father didn't. And I think they were rather naughtily didn't, really, they liked to think themselves as very English.
Your grandfather had stone brought over, didn't he?
Yes, I mean, he cared about the holy... idea of, but that's not being Zionist, that's being a Jew. And he was an Orthodox Jew, and he had a very big collection of Jewish antiquities and so on.
Which is now the Jewish Museum.
Now forms quite the core of the Jewish Museum, I think. But so that was the sort of family they were.
Then the sons, or some of the sons, go into the bank as well.
My grandfather's sons?
Yes.
You mean my uncles?
Yes.
They did two things. Well, Hugh, we've talked about and dismissed. The eldest son was called Jack. He married a barmaid, I think. And so that didn't endear himself to his father particularly. And he was, but he went into the bank, yes. I don't think he was ever a very clever banker, though my information comes from my father. I think he was not particularly bright. He was rather swashbuckling, is the sort of word that comes to mind. He had a beard and wore breeches, and he looked a bit naval, and was not much good, I would say, really. He was all right. He was my godfather, decent godfather, gave me 10 bob once, but he was not very bright or very memorable fellow. my father was in the bank, and my grandfather in the beginning of the century also bought or took over, we would say, a publisher called Routledge, and as a job for another son, Cecil Franklin, his second son, where I think with that in mind, and he put new directors in, and that thrived, and Cecil became head of that, and then they took over another firm called Kegan Paul, and they, as you know, perhaps are now Routledge and Kegan Paul.
Oh, yes, yes.
And that was my life for a while.
Mm.
So the two businesses have remained in the family, though Keyser's now isn't, because Keyser's fell upon bad days.
Mm. So some members of your father's generation carried on with the bank, but others went, well, the women went into public work.
Two of the brothers, two of four brothers were bankers, one was a publisher, and the other was Hugh.
Mm. Mm.
But I think, Colin, they were very anti-women. I mean, Keyser's was about the last firm in the city to have a woman secretary. they really didn't like having anything to do with women in business.
Mm. Yes.
And his charity was the Working Men's College, and over his dead body that women should join that.
Yes.
You know, there really was an irritating attitude towards women.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm sure your grandfather was the same, that it was the Eshet Hayil, the woman of worth, she has to be a wife and a mother. Mm. And so if you didn't marry, you really didn't fit into the scheme.
Mm. All this, I'm sure this must be a central background.
I'm sure it is. It's not accident what you say, that these women really found enthusiasm for more chances for women.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because Eva Hubbard admired her mother tremendously, Lady Spielman.
Well, she was one of these sort of great Jewish women.
Yes.
With a huge household.
Very fulfilled within limits.
Yes.
And Eva really broke down the limits. That's really most valuable. I'll switch it off. But.